put it down over her head, and it won't overturn. So the first thing they said, carry down to Tevis. Brought it down here. I wasn't on duty, but the Frost Martin was here. Just took a pair of tin snips and cut it off and released it.
When was this?
That child now is right close to... You know, time goes by so fast, 10, 12 years ago. But,
So you cut this thing off of her head?
Yeah.
Let me get a picture of that.
Put it on your head.
That's okay.
This is what we'll do. Yeah. Here's another thing I want to show you.
Okay.
You know, you wonder how anything is. You know what happens, you've lived on a farm, haven't you?
Yes, sir.
You know what happened when a shoot of corn will come up. It'll grow a while and two arms will come out, leaves or whatever. And go a little higher and two more. Have you ever thought how an animal was formed? Have you? Well, I say it's all at one time. His head won't made first, or his feet won't bone made first. The whole animal I've seen is born at the same time, and I got a large one over there now, but it's a little doe deer taken out of his mother's womb. But the one that brought me last year was a little bigger than a cigar. But this is what I want to show you. These are 1, 2, 3, 4 back feet and two tails. And there's two front feet here. And you turn it around there, there's two noses. Can you see it?
Yep.
There's two noses there. Can you see them, Roy?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And there's one eye here and one ear. I don't know the light maybe down now, they see them better. And two ears there, and that's the other two front feet. Siamese twins.
How about that?
That's
deer.
No, these are pigs.
Pig.
Yeah.
Okay.
That same fella Martin, you know him, don't you, Frost?
Yes, sir.
He had a pig pen out here, and they were born and.
Siamese twin.
Yeah.
Pigs, huh?
Yeah, this is the little deer I was telling you about. The car ran over a mother, and of course you can see where it hit her in the head.
Uh-huh. What do you got her in? What is that? Alcohol?
That is in formaldehyde.
Formaldehyde.
And that was, I believe it was 1959. And, this is 1975 when I put that deer there. Let me see if I got it in the right there. 1969. Yeah, 6 years later I went back to get formaldehyde at the drugstore and they couldn't let me have it. So Billy Biggs yet let me have it. There's embalming fluid. It may be formaldehyde too, I don't know, but I got it from him. Yeah. We can do it just as good down here. Just close the door or something. The only thing I didn't know.
Is your wife?
Go ahead, man. We got the tape before we go.
Yeah, it's on there.
It's gone.
If you don't mind, let's just get to what you were saying a while ago. The 1935 that you started here.
1935.
You started with this store.
Uh huh.
You were making what, $7?
$7 a week.
Uh-huh.
And I had worked here maybe 12 months, and the owner decided I ought to have a little raise. So he agreed to let me have two Coca-Colas a day, which was 10 cents. They were 5 cents each, and three packages of cigarettes so a week. They were 25 cents a pack. And I worked this way until 1941, and I got a job at Williamston in the central service station making $20 a week. Mm-hmm. When the man tried to hire me for working at the service station, I asked him how much could he pay me. He said $20 a week. I said, man, you can't pay that much money. Didn't think it was that much money in the world. Yes, sir. So I've been happy, Roy, and I think this is the thing in life that if you can get over to anybody, if he's doing what he's happy with, regardless of where he is, a ditch digger or what, don't bother. I haven't made near the money that a whole lot of people have, but I guarantee you one thing, I have been happier than anybody. I've raised three children, and two of them went to Greenville, and one went to state. At times it was hard, but the Lord will provide. It sure will. And I'm mighty happy. Got five grandchildren. And my son, the 15th of last month, got married in Hawaii. That just goes to show you a little bull can go a long way.
Let me answer this. We want to talk some more to you about the store, but how about the herring? That's what the main thing we were, you know.
Of course, the herring has been here, and at one point of the game, it was a survivor. And I think this is about as far back as you want to go. It was a must in the early days. We had no transportation, really. And just about didn't have any money. We were using due bills mostly. And every farmer and nearly every person in eastern North Carolina put up a barrel of herrings, depending on how big the family was, how many herrings he put up. But Easter Monday is always, as a rule, it's the height of the herring season. It's long in the middle, and of course, Easter's a holiday, and everybody would come to Janeville. Actually, if he didn't want to buy an herring, he watched his fishery that we had across the river. And they would buy the herring and go home and corn them and wait till next year to come to Janeville, a whole lot of it. But as time went on, the highways began to come in, and I think 1927, and this came through here. And people began to have more money, and we didn't have to have herrings anymore to survive. They would just come down for the look at the scene, and the Ruerton Club here, which is the only civic organization that small communities have. We organized in somewhere around 57 or something like that, but we would go down to the river and have a hot dog stand and try to boost up this herring gathering. Mm-hmm. And one year we even had a little Ferris wheel on top of the hill for the children. And then we begin to give away a prize pig and trying to create some excitement here. Besides, since they were not buying herring, they'd come and look at the fishery for a while. And but this past Easter is no exception of the crowd gathering here. It's grown each year. But they've done a whole lot of advertising, and I think that we had more people here at one time, Easter Monday, than we've ever had at any 2 years put together. Now, of course, this is just a guess. But every available spot in the side streets, town, parking lots, and all was filled up with cars. The mill down the river got a long trailer that he just disconnected. And he got a grass band, and the one over, you know, on the Cypress Grill side has got the same thing over. They didn't have the truck. They played music, drank a little liquor, catch a little fish, and just have a big time. I really think it's where it's going to wind up, we don't know.
How about telling us a little bit, so a lot of people who will read this story won't know anything about herring or anything else. How about the herring as compared to other fish? I mean, how the size of it and the way it tastes and the way you cook.
Well, Roy, that's a good question. Everything that you get, the animals and everything are different. Hogs and beef are different. So are fish. This herring is a delicate fish. He doesn't eat many solid foods. Mm-hmm. At one time, we didn't think he ate anything. But the sporters have begun to find baits that they actually will bite. Mm-hmm. He's round a pound at full grown, and I told you he was delicate. His scales come off of him real easy. He's got a tremendous lot of bone in him, which prepared right, it doesn't bother you for eating. When you get him fresh, they take a knife and cut it behind his front fin. He cut it all the way down, and then take most of his stomach, some of his stomach off, and rake the entrails out. Mm-hmm. Then you notch him. What I mean by notching, you take your knife and lay the fish down flat and cut to the backbone, mm-hmm, about a half an inch apart all the way down, and turn him over and do the same thing. Mm-hmm. You put him in deep fat and fry him good and crisp. Not like a cracker, but good and done. This eliminate any bone that you may get besides the backbone. You can eat all of the bone. Mm-hmm. Now, I told you a while ago about surviving. You corn it. What I mean by corn, you put salt on it. And this salt protects him from spoiling. And when you get ready to keep him that way for about 2 weeks, mm-hmm, and then a lot of blood will, some blood will come out, and then you pour this water off and repack it. They call it repacking. You put a layer of salt, a layer of herring, and then after you get him on up to the top, you make a pickle. It's called a pork. You fill a bucket full of salt and fill it up with water and fix this brine. They call it a salt brine. Mm-hmm. And you put this brine so it will float an egg. I don't know if you are familiar with this or not, but when you're in salt water, you can float much easier than you can in fresh water. Have you ever tried that, Roy?
Yeah, right.
Well, the same thing is true in this. You take that salt and make a brine strong enough so it can float this egg high. Then you know you got it. Mm-hmm. You pour this brine right over the salt and the herring. If you keep him in a cool place, this is enough to last you 6 to 12 months, you know, till you eat the entire body of herring. Mm-hmm. Some people put molasses in them, in the brine. Some people put pepper on top to keep the... I always get a screen wire. But it keep flies, because when they get to it, they'll mess it up. They can lay eggs on it and cause them to have bugs, and of course you got to throw the whole thing out.
You think they're about as good as any fish, Steve?
Well, he's an oily fish. He doesn't really taste
oily.
He's an oily fish. He doesn't taste like a brim or a bass. He's got an individual taste that no other fish has, and this is true with fresh or cold. Now some fish that not as good corn. Now we have tried white perch here corn, and they've tried some rock. But they, in salt water, they corn a spot and a mullet. And this herring also is used, they call them blind robins in beer gardens. They take it after they corn it and smoke it. Mm-hmm. And they serve it with beer. They eat it just like it is, not cooking at all. Now we've talked about cooking the herring fresh, but I haven't told you anything about cooking him corn. After he his corn for a week, well, it doesn't take but just a few days for him to really strike. Mm-hmm. And after this, if you're going to fry him, I like to soak him overnight. Now, the more times you change the water, the fresher he'll get. But if you soak him overnight and change water at least three times, now I'm speaking of just, I got six herrings, and I want to soak them out. I'll take a dishpan and fill it up with just regular spigot water and lay these in, and maybe I'll change water two, three times during the night. And the next day, any time while he's ready to take him out and drain him and meal it and put it in deep fat. And no bone bothers you at all in this. You don't have to notch him. Now, a lot of people fillet him while he's green, and this is really the best method. And when you get ready to cook him, you haven't got to scale him, you haven't got to do anything but soak him out, put him in meal, and of course to the hot frying pan. And he is delicious.
I've never had that, but I'm gonna try it. I heard it's really good. What the season of the year they run is not that long, is it? Or?
No. We've got one cafe here I mentioned to you about the Cypress Grill. He opens up this year, the last week in February. Mm-hmm. And today is what, 22nd. Saturday night is his last day. Mm-hmm. Now, after he closes, it's pretty well dead on Roanoke River. There'll mm-hmm. be a few more folks that'll continue to catch fish, and as the herring dwindle out and go back to sea, the rock fishermen are anxious to get them for bait. They cut them up, make the wonderful rock bait or catfish, and they use them for trot lines. But we just don't have any bulk market. That's what went away with our fishery. We had a man from Cape Charles that came down and leased this fishery from the original owners, and he ran it a couple, 3 years, and he sold he got a market for the herring, and they would put them in big baskets and freeze them and sell them the next spring for crab bait. But this wasn't profitable, and since that dam has been upon us, it just raises the water temperature, the height of our water, so we couldn't run a fishery anyway.
When was the fishery here?
Well, this stayed here, I don't know, I'm coming. This stayed here for years and more years, and at one time we had two fisheries in Plymouth, and one in Cam Point, which would be halfway between here and Plymouth. And then, of course, we had one right across the river. And then around the bend, we had another. We had five fisheries on Roanoke River at one time. And I've seen them over to our fishery here catch the estimated haul at 75,000 herrings at one time. Mm. That's a whole lot of fish.
Yeah, sure. Let us just answer a little bit about your story.
Mm-hmm.
How how's it changed over the years?
Well, you mean how I fitted in the program?
Yeah.
Well, it was owned and operated by a fellow Clarence Sexton, and for years he and myself ran it, and when we were taken away in World War II, his wife and Skillet Long's wife ran it. Of course, 3 years or so later, why, the war was all over and we came back, and I went to Williamston with the Williamston Peanut Company, weighing peanuts, and Sexton and myself always got along mighty fine together, and he came up offering me a proposition that I would come back with him, he'd give me half of the business. And since I liked this very much, of course, I jumped at the idea. And we came back and started again as partners, and we got along fine, of course. I believe I mentioned a while ago we didn't ever make a whole lot of money, but we were able to keep the wolf off the door.
Yeah.
And finally he decided he wanted to put all of his time in farming, so Charles Martin and myself bought him out. We stayed in business for 17 years.
What year was this that you bought him out? Was this right after war?
Well, we came in 35, so I would say it must have been about 45, or somewhere around early 50s. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How has the merchandise that you carried and the wants of the customers, has that changed?
You know, that's a good question. At one time, we had a family out here that was a tenant farmer, and they had somewhere around 7 or 8 children, I'm not sure. And we ran them 1 year, household, kitchen, furniture, and needs. Now, they had their own meat and they had their garden. But we furnished kerosene, smoking tobacco, cigarettes, chewing tobacco if there was any, and shoes once in a while for the children, and overalls and what have you, and piece goods for the entire family for less than $300. Now this is what I was telling you about a while ago. We just about didn't have any money. We used to do beer. When the pulp mill came here, they were a different company from we have now, but it was still the same thing. Mm-hmm. They started paying about $2 an hour. And this same man that I was telling you about decided that he ought to quit farming and go on day labor. Mm-hmm. So we figured it out, if he'd have worked 365 days, that's every day around the clock, at $2 an hour, he made more money in the share farming that year than he would have working at the pulp mill. Now, this wasn't saying anything about his rent, wasn't saying a thing about his garden that I mentioned to you and his hog pen and things like that. But you ask about what kind of grocers, standing in order just about when you see a customer coming, surely you want to go get him 10 pound of flour. Now, if it was a big family, you get him 25 pound of flour. 4 pound bucket of lard, and 5 pound of meal, and some side meat. Now, this was just about what every customer bought, and then you'd ask for him what else. Mm-hmm. Of course, we sold, at that time, sold molasses. I buy it now in a 5-gallon container, but then I bought it in a 50-gallon drum. Mm-hmm. It's made over here in Wilmington, North Carolina, called Covington's Extra Fancy. And I also would sell two of them a year. Now I sell maybe 3 to 5 5-gallons. So that's how much that's fallen off. Another thing would be of interest to you would be you didn't get any fried chicken only in the spring of the year. I can well remember when I'd set a crate out in the front and we'd put anywhere from 3 to 10 frying sized chickens, and he wouldn't weigh but 2 pound feathers and all. You'd sell him for $1 a piece, and then of course you had to go home and clean him and pick him, and the weight he was used about lose about a third. But anyhow, comparing that with the daisy, I sold 10 chickens a week then, and now I'm one of 3 more merchants in town. And I've ordered 2 cases, which is 40 pounds of the case. So, I mean, 40 pounds of the case. Now, and so that's, and now you can sell them for 49 cents a pound, which you get a chicken dressed and drawn ready for the frying pan for $1 that you had to pay $1 for him on the hoof then.
Yeah.
That's one drastic change. And another change is the time is going on, Roy. The man no longer buys things for the house. The time, and I'm telling you, 95% or more that was carried to anybody's home was carried by the man.
Is that right?
Yes,
come in
sir.
And buy the whole thing, huh?
He come to town Saturday for 2 things. The last one to get groceries. And you can imagine what the first one would be. So I said, we were talking about the hours now. We opened up about 6 o'clock. That was every day, including Sunday. Sunday we may wait till 7 to open up, but we didn't have any ice boxes, no refrigeration. And people that buy meats on the weekend, Saturday night, I was telling you, we would pack them in this ice box, and he comes back to them Sunday morning. That was one of the first highlights that I can remember when a man got enough money to buy a nickel worth of ice for dinner.
Is that right?
Oh, indeed. That's the truth. About the only way you keep your milk was put it in the well bucket and lower it in the well. I know you know you've heard of that.
Well, no, I ain't heard of that. That's the way they kept it cool.
That's the only way you kept it. And when you build an ice box, you'd fill it up with sawdust. Yes. When you got enough money to buy 50 cents worth of ice, put it in there, and you'd put it 5 or 6 inches deep in sawdust and wrap it up just like it was going out of style. Another drastic change has been, I was telling you about the men brought the groceries in. Now the woman does 99% of the buying, including buying for a husband. We sold men's shirts, overalls and dungarees, and work shoes and dress shoes, and even carried ladies' shoes, and of course some underwear and things like that. But the children no longer buy from any place like that. The style changes every few months. Dungarees, for instance, we'll go back to that. At that time, it was just one dungaree or overall. It was the same thing 5 years from now as it was today. But today they have little legs 130 days and tight pants, and the next day is big legs and tight pants. And
bell bottom.
This is the thing, yeah. And you see the stitches are different in the pocket. And you've just got to have the right stitch at the right time. And television sells a lot of we never wear out clothes anymore. The time that I was telling you about, you just about wore patches before it's all over. You wore patch, you know, on top of patch.
Well, it's really changed, then.
Well, some of it is much better. You had time to go visit then. I think this was the thing that we missed a whole lot. And Janesville or Martin County or Eastern North Carolina is has changed the least and of anywhere else, I think, in the world. I tell you, my son got married a while ago, but his parents, well, his mother and father-in-law came down for a party we were having for the two children, bride and groom. And they were amazed at how